Hello, it's me. I was wondering if after all these years you'd like to meet to go over everything. They say the time's supposed to heal ya, but I ain't done much healing. Hello, can you hear me? I'm in California dreaming about who we used to be when we were younger and free. I've forgotten how it felt before the world fell at our feet. There's such a difference between us and a million miles.
Good afternoon. You've got Living Writers on WCBN FM Ann Arbor. I'm T. Hetzel, and I'm so happy to have in the studio today Dunya McHale. Dunya, welcome. Thank you for being here today.
Well, thank you, T, for having me. I appreciate it. I'm happy to be here too.
It's so good to see you. And I'll say we also, I'm very happy to have a studio audience of Lara. My niece, Lara Hetzel, is visiting. And I'm, as always, I'm super grateful to have Jason Adam Voss, engineering behind the glass, to make us sound good. So, and Dunya, thanks again for being here and for picking today's songs. Why this song? Like, what this song... What is it meaning to you?
Songs, when you said which songs you prefer we have for this, you know, most songs I listen to are in Arabic. So, but I thought, okay, let me think of English song. And Hello, it's kind of, I love it. But also, in general, I listen to music because music also doesn't need translation. So, but Arabic songs were the first, when you leave your country, it's the song that, the first thing that when you hear it, you think of your country, is the song mm-hmm. when you're from, like, you know, when you used to listen to it.
And so is it something where you'll often at home be playing records or CDs or the music?
When I'm driving.
Or when you're driving.
Yes.
Oh, nice.
Okay. Mostly when I'm driving.
Yeah, we all are spending some time in the car, like the
right.
ye old commute. And mm-hmm. oh, or coming here. Thanks for coming to the studio, down to the station.
It's a pleasure, yeah. It took an hour, but that was a pleasure to, you know, it's a chance always, you know, in the car you can listen to audios and things like that.
Yeah. Do you have any car poems, Dunya? Because I didn't find a car poem in your latest book of poems, Tablets, Secrets of Clay, of the Clay.
Car poems. Something about the car? No, I don't think. I'm not very interested in cars. I have to use the car, but
it's a
I
tool.
Love to walk.
Yeah. I love to walk, too.
But it's hard to walk from Sterling Heights to Ann Arbor. I have to drive.
Right. That would be quite the odyssey. Well, I'm so glad you're here. And let's talk about this book of yours that's on the table with us, Tablets. Secrets of the Clay, out with New Directions this year. How did Tablets start for you? Is it going back to the time, like your grandmother, when you were writing as a little girl?
Exactly. Yes, it did start in childhood. I mean, that time I didn't think of all this that mm-hmm. is in the book. All I was doing was on the roof of our home in Baghdad during those summer nights where, you know, you are under the stars. And my grandmother was living with us, and she was the one who was telling me those stories. And these stories of wisdom, I learned so much from them. I was so excited. I mean, they fascinated me, but she didn't have a book. We didn't have a book at home. And I wanted to see something to read or to see pictures, and there was no such thing. These were oral folk stories, that were passed from generation to generation. So one day I went down to in the morning to downstairs. You know, that time you wake up not by alarm but by flies and sun, the strong sun. And I went to my notebook and I wrote my own way. I wrote some of the stories, and I drew them. And I was not thinking of it, what I was doing, but I think that was my very first experience of literature. And that, not only writing, but it had also of translation, because my grandmother, our home language was Aramaic, and I was writing those in Arabic, which was the language of my school, and I was drawing them. So this tablet, I think, is a continuation of that very early experience on the roof.
And it seems like, Dunya, you were fated to have all of these multiple layers of translation, like you just said, from Aramaic, from your grandmother, into your own, like, the school language of, and home language of Arabic as well. And the drawings that you added right away. What were the drawings like that you were using to either tell the story or illustrate the stories that your grandmother told you?
I think they were stories. Better than these drawings than I'm doing now, because those were like, trying to, as you said, illustrate. And I thought I was good in drawing, but then I discovered, no, I was not an artist, but these are more primitive and in purpose, because those ancients, to imitate the ancient Sumerian tablets that are supposed to be primitive. So I thought about my ancestors, the Sumerians. Their first communication was through images. There was no language yet. And I thought of them that they were not all artists, you know, but they were expressing their thoughts on those clay tablets. So I looked at those tablets and said, what did this mean? What did the circle mean? Is the world? Is it love? Is it what story? Is it every image there? And then what fascinated me even more is the cracks on these tablets, the cracks. Because, you know, a cracked tablet, these cracks, they do not erase the message. They enhance it.
How so?
Because you think of it like there's a line, missing line, when the glyphs, later they were glyphs. First they were just images. Then there was a combination of images and glyphs. Like images were part of the language. And when there's a missing line, so you think about it, it's like a poem there. It's more, it has the, it adds meaning, actually. To that, so
the space in between, crack in between.
Yeah, you wonder what is it missing here? What was missing? What is meant to be said? And this was the very first tool of communication in the world, and this communication included stories, emotions, but also like gossip and laws, all kinds of everything. They're like traces of the world. So when I went back to that form, as if I was trying to touch that history, not as something distant, but as something living and still speaking.
To inhabit it in your own present way.
Yes. This handwriting, I thought about it. You were talking about this before, that how there's handwriting in Arabic. You asked me, can you read this? You can read it or not. But this handwriting, so it's part of the design in Arabic of these poems. So it is, there's a saying by a French poet. His name is Jean Cocteau. He says, poets do not draw. They anti. They anti their handwriting and then knotted again in a different way. So I thought, oh, this resonates. A friend of mine told me about this quote. Her name is Laurie Cohen. She lives in New York. So anyways, but she told, when she sent me this, I said, this resonates with the tablets, because here, you know, handwriting is a living thing, is living script. And this, it's this tangling of the layers of languages, Arabic and English, between exile and belonging, between ancient and contemporary. So it is that. It is the handwriting's part of it.
And with the idea, the concept of tablets, it's a big enough concept to cover the span of time. Like you were saying, your Sumerian ancestors are using a type of tablet form, and now you acknowledge that it could be a tablet like an iPad or a cell phone or a laptop kind of tablet form. Exactly. As well.
Exactly.
And
yes.
And these, it seems like when you were starting to build these tablets, these new tablets in your book, Dunya, that the images are as primary as the words, as the text, and that the images, were those often what you started with, or did it kind of go either way?
Yeah, either way, but most of them, the writing first, and then I tried to imagine myself in that time. And then without the language, how would you express this idea with the image? How would you express it if you didn't have this alphabet, for example? So, I said, this, as you mentioned, now that the tablet until this moment, the modern tablets that we carry and use, and if you think of tablet, every poem functions as a tablet, as a matter of fact, because every poem, it has, you know, those traces and memories and all that, and you can carry it, you can bury it, lose it, find it again, and read it as a secret. Mm-hmm. So in a way or another, that's what poem is a tablet like that, in function, not only in form.
Right. Because even in the act of writing or drawing as a way of telling the story on the tablet,
right,
it becomes different for the maker, as well as the reaching out to someone else who will see it, hopefully, as a communication. But maybe it's enough for the maker to express what the idea is, or the story, the everyday story that they want to tell.
Yes, and even when we don't write on an actual tablet, like clay tablet or any tablet, but that urgency on the page is the same.
And we're transformed by the doing of it.
Exactly, yes. It does, as if kind of some kind of myth-making, because this has this alchemy. It transforms from something to another, and, you know, distills that experience.
When you were starting tablets, did you know that it was going to be for this book? Did you know how the project was going to take shape as you were beginning it, even? Because there's a grouping of the tablets, like in tablets 1, 2, 3, mm-hmm. 4.
In the beginning, that was part of my previous books. Started with the Iraqi Nights. It was was not all tablets. It was other poems, and then one section tablets with the images also. And then another time in my book, In Her Feminine Sign, also another one. But in this one, it's all about that this time. I had so much fun doing that, you know. You forget yourself when you think of it as with the image, and I found it more fun, actually, this way.
And it feels like you're going to do more of these, because this book is Tablets and then Secrets of the Clay, which makes me think there'll be Tablets something else after this.
More secrets? I don't
know.
Yeah,
more secrets.
maybe. I didn't think of it, but...
Or other elements.
Yeah. But secrets always... what is it poetry is if it's not telling secrets? It is.
Yeah. And with you, you always manage to have... also humor within them, not every single one, but there's this element of like play and humor and turning something on its side a bit to make it into something that asks a question of the reader too.
Yeah, I always hear that. I feel happy that readers tell me that, even though it doesn't come to my mind that it is humor. I feel sometimes if it is grim, because a lot of, you know, the war and all these experiences in it. But I do feel it's a play also, the sense of playing. So, and then clay tablets, don't we, when we are like young, we play the Play-Doh and stuff. So... maybe that's what, I don't know, but it's the irony also. It's sometimes even in my longer poems, I feel that is the element, the irony makes it more interesting, in my opinion.
It definitely, you feel it, the depth of it with the irony.
It's a way of you know, I come from a background of being a journalist. I worked as a journalist from the Baghdad Observer, so I learned this. As a journalist, I always felt how I make my story or any piece that I'm going to publish, I make it interesting. So it is not a matter, it's not telling things, telling realities, but how you make it interesting, the way you tell it. So this is, I think, it works in literature also, in poetry. So, so we have image, metaphor, irony, these things maybe that help make it more interesting.
It's all at work here, too.
Thank you.
In Tablets, Secrets of the Clay. Let's take a short break, and then we come back more today with Dunya Mikhail. You're listening to Living Writers. I'm T. Hetzel, and we'll be back. Welcome back. If you're just tuning in, I'm so glad you did. Today in the studio, Dunya Mikhail joins us. Dunya, thanks again for being here.
Thank you.
Choosing the music. What were we just listening to?
Nasir Shamma's music I selected to... Nasir Shamma is an Iraqi oud player. He's... I know him. He was my friend back home. And I never forget that one time evening when, during the war, there was a building that was a shelter for people, and it was destroyed, damaged. And then we went there, and he brought his oud, and, you know, in the ruins there. And not only that, the setting but also his music that time. It was something called Amaria music. And he's such a brilliant musician that he made the sound of sirens in his music. That was wonderful. I never forgot about that.
Yeah, so haunting too.
Mm-hmm.
Because sirens were so familiar in that time for the everyday.
Exactly.
And to be able to weave that in. Thanks for choosing that for today. Well, for his music for today. Before we get back to the conversation, I'm going to read your short bio in the back of Tablet's Secrets of the Clay, out with New Directions Press. Dunya Mikhail is an Iraqi-American poet and writer. She is the author of the poetry collections The War Works Hard, shortlisted for the International Griffin Poetry Prize, Diary of a Wave Outside the Sea, winner of the Arab American Book Award, The Iraqi Nights, winner of the John Frederick Nims Memorial Prize for Translation, and In Her Feminine Sign, which was chosen as one of the 10 best poetry books of 2019 by the New York Public Library. Her nonfiction book, The Beekeeper, was a finalist for the National Book Award, and her debut novel, The Bird Tattoo, was shortlisted for the International Prize for Arabic Fiction. Mikhail is a laureate of the UNESCO Sharjah Prize for Arab Culture and is a recipient of the UN Human Rights Award for Freedom of Writing. She currently teaches Arabic and poetry at Oakland University in Michigan. And I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
So it's good to see you. So you mentioned being a journalist back home before you left. Was that after, because you went to university for studying English literature, is that right, Dunya?
Yes, at the University of Baghdad. Yeah, I mean, in the beginning, when I graduated from high school, I was interested in math, if you believe it or not.
And even though you were writing poetry in high school as well.
At the same time, and I thought I would come to America to study math. But then there was no travel during the war. And then I thought to study English literature so that at least I'm prepared. If I travel, I know English language. But then when I studied English literature and I met other writers, other Iraqi poets and writers, that changed my life, actually, because I was writing, but not showing what I was writing. I mean, I was writing in my room. But then when I shared with others our writings, and it was like kind of informal MFA. We didn't have MFA back home. There is no such thing as a program. But that was similar because we had feedback and for each other and listening to each other and sharing. So then I forgot about math and America and all that during that time when I was with those poets and young, they called us young poets. Now we wish they call us young poets. Yeah.
Are you still in touch with the young poets?
Yeah, some of them. They all, their heads white. They have white hairs, but I dyed.
Yeah. Looking good, Dunya. Looking good.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm going white. Do some of the poets, do they come over and visit you at all over here?
No, I mean, they're still in Baghdad. They went to all other countries, Europe, Australia. I mean, all Iraqis, you know, they're everywhere now. But those times, it was so, in addition to the war and all that destruction, it was such a rich cultural life at the same time. You go to the cinema, you watch movies, you go to the exhibitions, art exhibitions. They were such, Iraq is very good in art, in paintings, also in poetry. And story. I mean, you we always had these evenings, cultural evenings. And that time, you know, we didn't even have computer or phones and stuff like that. So that was like the big entertainment for us. The book was the main thing.
And would this have been in the 80s, Dunya?
The 80s, exactly. Yes. That's the 80s.
And then you came to the States via Jordan, was it? With a visa as your occupation as poet.
Oh, you know about that, right? It's interesting because it's very symbolic and it's meaningful. I think that to have my passport as a poet, that poetry was my pass to the world, or my, you know, passport. I still keep that passport that says my profession is a poet. And I was able to leave because of that. Because, you know, poets, nobody needs any paperwork from them. They're not, they don't belong to any place there at that time. So they let you go. And in Jordan, Amman, Jordan, in the capital, I stayed about a year there before coming to the U.S. And that was also another experience of journalism, because that was different, because that I had a column, a weekly column, called like Scribbles. So it was very...
How connected it is also to what we're talking about today in Scribbles.
Yes. So, and it was... It had those ironies and writing. I was trying to write in a way, even in Iraq, in my poetry. The way I was writing, sometimes I was using extra metaphors and images than the poem needs, because I didn't want the censors to understand my poetry, but I wanted the actual readers understand it only. So those were like codes. And so Scribbles also had these kind of layers of meanings in it.
And with the codes, it seems like that was useful because your audience could understand what you were saying, you know, in Iraq when you were publishing the books there. But it seems like that's when things started to be Well, was that when things started to be difficult, where you thought, well, maybe the government is picking up on some of these codes and maybe this is a good time for me to leave?
Yeah. You know, as a writer, as a journalist, you need freedom is essential, you know. So that time, as a journalist, many times you were dictated. And with poetry also, as I mentioned, there was some line, like red line, we couldn't cross. So,
and was it, how would you know where that red line was? Because there were...
Sometimes a hard way, some people disappeared, so we knew what they did. And sometimes you guess, it became kind of, from what was happening, we knew what to say or able to say or not to say. But that kind of told me how important was the world, how the word. Words were very effective, that they meant a lot.
They could have that much power.
They had power, so that people were affected by it.
And the government would want to stop it.
Yeah, I mean, that they weren't affected. And it was a certain day, I remember, when I decided to leave. That was... it was a meeting, kind of journalist meeting, and I didn't like what I saw, that there was really unfair things happened in front of our eyes to other colleagues. And I felt that was kind of... That day I decided I needed to leave. So then shortly after I did.
And is there any looking back after that?
looking back, you know, isn't that something like what Orpheus did?
Yes.
When he lost his...
she didn't make it out with him.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, because there was that one condition, not to look back, but he did. And I admire his looking back, because maybe it's out of love, out of care, that even though he lost her because of that look. And what did I lose? I feel I lost something, but I don't know what it is exactly. But I always feel I left something behind.
But here, you have your daughter, your husband. You have another. You have Michigan, another kind of mitten shape that you mentioned that in one of the poems and tablets that Iraq also is a somewhat of a mitteny shape too.
Yes, by chance I saw. I said, "Wow, was this like? How did this happen by chance? Like the two mittens? Yeah, the map of Iraq is similar to the map of Michigan.
So maybe in some ways, meant to land here after Jordan."
Well, yes. I mean, now, here I'm married and I have a daughter and I have life. And gradually, your home becomes these words, their poem. And by the way, you know what? In Arabic language, the poetic line is called bayt, which means home. So, yeah, so you, and so maybe, so it's not so strange maybe to have
have the home already, and that you're creating with each, the work that you're doing.
Yes, gradually, trust me, it's not exaggeration to say it is gradually you feel it's not anymore home is not a certain place. It's not. It's a feeling. It is. It's that feeling. I feel myself and belonging really when I write. That's my when I feel I'm myself. So that's homeland.
Yes. Thanks, Dunya. I understand.
Thank you.
That's... In my own way. Let's take a short break and then we'll be back. Today on Living Writers, Dunya Mikhail is here in the studio with us. Her latest tablets, Secrets of the Clay, out with new directions. I'm T. Hetzel. We've got Jason behind the glass. Lara's studio audience. We'll be back. Welcome back. If you're just tuning in, you're just in time for more with Dunya Mikhail today in the studio. Her latest book of poems, Tablets, Secrets of the Clay, out with new directions. Dunya, how about this song that we just heard? What's the connection
for today? Shahrazad. Yes. Shahrazad is, in the Arabian Nights, a very important figure. Shahrazad, that how she saved her life through storytelling. But isn't it fascinating, this music also?
Yes.
Yeah.
Hearing it, you feel so many layers are at play in every moment, in the swells and in the pauses.
Yes, there are stories in it.
Yes. Yeah, you almost can visualize like the threads of the stories in Technicolor or so.
Yes.
So talking about images, let's Let's go directly to the book here on the table with us, Tablets, Secrets of the Clay. Dunya, could you, is there one of the poems that you'd like to start with, one of the tablets, and maybe you could talk to us about what the image, well, whatever you'd like, but describe the image as well, because then people can kind of have a sense of what to see in their mind. Unless there's a poem you'd like to start with first, and then we can talk about the drawings and the images later.
Do you want me to also read it in Arabic or just in English?
I would love it if
okay, maybe some of them.
Okay.
So I'm just going to randomly open the pages. So this one, لست أمك يا وطن فلماذا تبكي هكذا في حضني كلما أصابك أذن. Homeland, I'm not your mother. So why do you weep in my lap like this every time something hurts you? Well, the image is kind of this, these broken bricks, and there's a brokenness in this.
There's image. Also a curve to it as well.
Yeah, yeah. So, but some of the images, so the writing is the image. Some are not directly so. Okay, so let me read this one. Oh, the image. The image of this is in Iraqi we call it istikan. Istikan is a small cup for tea, specifically. Istikan is an Iraqi word for it. كل قطرة ماء ذكرى نهر عبره ناس نعرفهم أو لا نعرفهم منهم موتى نخبئهم خلف جفوننا منهم أحياء نخبئهم كي لا يموتوا منهم أصدقاء يجلبون نهر دجلة في قدح من الشاي. Every drop of water is a different memory of a river crossed by those we know and don't know. Some who have died we hide behind our eyes. Some who are living we hide to keep alive. Some who are friends bring over the tigress in a cup of tea.
I love that one. That's that's near the very end of the book.
Yes, yes. Isn't? Yeah, that is. Maybe I read some just in English, some of them. The earth is so simple. You can explain it with a tear or a laugh. The earth is so complicated. You need a tear or a laugh to explain it. I didn't sleep last night. It was as if the night itself hid in the morning coffee. This is true. Last night I didn't sleep. If you can't save people, at least don't hate them. Some poems are complicated, some are silly, some are troublemakers, but all poems have parents who want them to do well. They kept drawing circles on the ground as if their alphabet was a feeling with no end. So, for example, this one, you know, in Arabic, Arabic language has a lot of circles in it, in the writing itself. So this, when it's written, this in Arabic, those circles are part of the image of the language, of the circles and the alphabet are part of it because it talks about the circles. So things like that.
Yes, yes.
I don't know if you want me how much I read or not.
I'd love to hear another one if you would mind. And could we maybe one, because some of the images, if we look at it, some are spare and then some are very detailed. And some are more the Arabic like you just mentioned, would make like the borders of, or define the circles within the circles. Mm. And then sometimes it almost feels like some of the Arabic becomes part of like a figure, a character, or blends into.
Right. So the cage owner reminds the sparrow, life outside is an inferno. One day the sparrow flies away, and there in the heights, overlooking the ruins of the world, the sparrow discovers the cage owner was right. It sings about the ruins, a beautiful song without walls. Oh, by the way, there's this very simple one. I don't know if it's naive or simple, but the UNESCO adopted this as a sticker. This one that says, let love be the new world order. Yeah. ليكن الحب هو النظام العالمي الجديد.
How did you decide to order the tablets here, the order of the poems?
You know, they are all short, but so each, there are 10 tablets. Each one has 24 small sections, and they're all accompanied with the images, so 240 short sections with images.
And how did you decide on those numbers, like to make that framework for the tablets?
You mean like the 24?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I felt the 24, I mean, it was kind of an, it was a distinguished number in the during that Sumerian time. You know, math was, it started, the wheel and the math, all that started that time. And 24, it was kind of a, not very complete, almost complete number, 24 hours a day. Mm-hmm. And I found a lot of in the 12 or 24 in the sections and tablets in the ancient Sumerian tablets.
So were you researching these then, Dunya?
Like yeah, when I was researching.
So what was that like? Like, was that part of the research process that's connected to the book, or were you doing that for other work and then this creative act sort of just grew out of that?
There's some other story that I'll come in a new book, but in general, I was just interested, fascinated by these, so I wanted to know more and more. Mm. But then when I did the book, I knew some stuff that I searched before, so I kind of, they came together like that.
Mm. It's so interesting to watch you go through your own book to see where you stop as well. I wish I could kind of describe it better for everyone listening, but to see you holding your book and looking through it, how are you deciding which ones that you stop and read right now?
So, for example, now I stopped by this that I thought, let me read this one. حينما أفتقد أصدقائي أراهم في ورق الشجر يلوحون لي بأياديهم من الأغصان المتمايلة. When I miss my friends, I find them in tree leaves. I see their hands waving from swaying branches. So if you see this, like kind of, you know, these hands look like branches, and but also the writing kind of, it gives that.
And in your book, Dunya, like you have, because what New Directions has published is the English words, and then the image itself that Dunya's drawn that includes the Arabic writing that's knitted into the image itself. Mm-hmm. And then Dunya, it looks like have you translated it off to the side too? Is that what the words on the side here are, or is that?
Yeah, the translation. So it's like I was writing it writing it again. So in Arabic, then I translated first in Arabic, then I translated it into first actually first the image. So translation from word to images, and then to the other language, which is English in this case. So
it was Arabic, then the image, then the image, then to English.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And were you aware, I mean, I wonder even if you could talk about this, like the changes that happened for you as a poet, like in with the change, with the translation of it? Because whenever you're translating something, it's not like for like. There's other things that are involved, like feelings that you can sense that's in a word that, I mean, if we think about when you talked about the circle, it could mean many things. It could mean never ending. It could mean like a sketch of the world, the earth. It could mean zero, nothing.
Yes.
And so when you're thinking about translations and moving among them, what were those shifts, and could you feel them?
I was in the same page most of the time that was happening. So it is you're watching. So you know, Arabic goes the right to left, and then English left to right, and in the same page you go back and forth, and so it's like fighting or something. So
that conflict is always generative.
Yeah, as if it's conflict, but actually it is. It's more like love, because it is as if they grow together like true lovers.
Like without, a dance.
Right, like a dance. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, exactly. And the second language, in this case, English, makes me understand my first more deeply, and it makes me more sensitive towards my first language, and it makes me also sense where the flaws are in the original. Because sometimes when something, you feel like, why is it the meaning is like that? It's not always the problem in the translation, sometimes in the original text.
So then would you go back to the original?
Then I think about the original again, where it's like as if you're editing, or, yes, you know, as if it's a second draft of it. So it's a kind of communication back and forth between the two languages.
Does it feel different now after creating this way of working, when you're writing something else that isn't using sort of this multiple translation technique, including image as well as two languages? Like, 'cause you said it's so fun. So is it something that, I don't know, do you would miss if you were writing, I don't know, is your next project another book of poems, Dunya? Maybe I'll phrase it that way. Like, what's your next writing project?
I have two projects that I am moving in between this and that. I always, now if I say I have poems, that's there, always. So poems are always, I have always new poems that are happening. But also I'm writing a memoir this time.
Different from the memoir that you've written,
yeah,
the memoir in verse.
Different from this one.
This
is a prose.
And how is writing in prose with the memoir? Where does it pick up from the beginning of your story, or how are you framing your memoir?
It is chapters, kind of.
Do you start back in Baghdad, or do you start?
I mean, changes may happen, but so far the current draft, I start from a moment when I'm a child, and that moment shaped, you know, it was very effective moment. Some kind of question I had, and the answer stayed in my mind. I start with that moment, if I don't change it later.
yes. But would you mind sharing that moment now? Or should we wait for the memoir?
Let me think. Let's keep the, maybe so that, so let's keep the suspense if
okay.
Maybe the surprise, because the whole book is based on this one.
This moment.
So I wanna have it in a way that, say it in a way that is the way, how I want to say it. Yeah.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. Let's take a very short break, and then we'll be back. Today on Living Writers, Dunya Mikhail is here. I'm T. Hetzel, and we'll be back. Welcome back. You've got Living Writers. I'm T. Hetzel, and today Dunya Mikhail is here. Tablets, Secrets of the Clay, out with new directions. Dunya, you also have a poem, a new poem that's just been published recently too.
Yeah, some of my, I have a new manuscript that I'm still working on, but do you want me to read one of the new poems?
That would be wonderful, yeah.
Yeah, there's this short one called Time. They said, time does not pass. It only goes to another place, like a dog losing its way. In my journey looking for where time went, I spent half of my life. One day, as I was wandering, I heard time's voice. No one can follow me, so why are you trying? I said, because you look like someone I miss.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I love that one. Mm-hmm. Time. What's the new manuscript like, Dunya, that you're working on?
The poems, it has this, maybe it's influenced by how this living in this era of technology, mm-hmm. and then so it is how much is affected our emotions and our life by that. That's like there's a long poem on that subject, and there are other poems. Sometimes it's hard for me to say if it's a book of poems, what is it about? Like, it's more, if it's a story, maybe I can, but with poems, they're not all the same theme.
And there's more like a feeling as you're making them, if they're the ones that are in this group together.
Yeah, so I try to understand them, see what do they share, how do they talk to each other, the poems, so, and then I figure it out.
I love how it seems like dogs are one of your symbols or characters that you return to, maybe less so than birds, because there were many birds and bird images and tablets, but there was also a dog. That one, I also dog-eared so many pages in here, it's not helpful to try to find where that one was. But you have like the shells, the seashells, some of these, almost these touchstones to your work.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe I was a bird first. I mean, I don't know.
What kind of bird? What kind of bird were you?
I don't know which bird, but when I was a child, I used to tell a friend in the elementary school that I was telling her that I was flying. Like I sometimes fly, and she believed me, and so I met her like last year, and she remembered that, and she said, remember, you said that, and I believed you. I said, well, I still fly.
That's a poem in this book,
so,
too.
So I used it as a tablet.
Yes, this is in the tablet.
Oh, you remember?
Would you read that one, Dunya?
Yeah.
Because I think it's...
It's not toward the end.
It's not the last poem, but it's number 20 in the last section on page 131.
Oh my God, you know which one. Thank you so much.
Well,
a reader you are. Yeah. Yeah, my friend asked, remember when you said you could fly and I believed you? I smiled, I can still fly.
Can you describe, what is the image that accompanies this one? How could, because it's Arabic into a shape.
Yes, it's a shape of a bird, the Arabic. right? Does it show that?
Yes. That's
I tried to make it as a... The lines, they look like flying.
So the wings, you can see the wings outstretched and flying. Mm. And so when you are to read, like if you were to read the Arabic here on this one, Dunya, what would it be like for you to read that? Like where, because you said you go from right to left in Arabic, but in the image, is that also possible? Do you start with the larger letters in the image? Is that how?
So it's right to left, but then the last line goes from top to down because to give that the wing. So it's flexible this way.
I love that. I love the flexibility.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
It feels like a form that it's inspiring. Like I want to do this now. It feels like you're making like your own alphabet, your own cuneiform.
Mm. Well, thank you. Wow.
In some ways, with the pictures that are telling the story. Because I wonder, I almost wish that I could see the book, go through it without seeing the English so close to it at first. Mm. I wonder what, I can do that. Don't worry everyone at home, I can try that. I can block things off and see what it's like. Mm. And I love the visual effect of this book where the images are such a primary part of the page. Were you pleased with like the layout, how some of the tablets then are neighboring tablets and they're taking up space on the page?
Yes, new directions, you know, and also Carcanet in Britain, the British. So both are elegant and beautiful.
Did they use the same layout so that the structure it would
they
be?
They used the new directions layout they used. Yeah.
Dunya, will you read a couple more to send us off here today?
Okay. A bullet, then a siren, then ruins, then a bird song telling the truth. No finish lines in poetry.
Thank you so much for today.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I think that is the best way. No finish lines. But today we'll say goodbye for the moment. Thanks for being here today. Today on Living Writers, Dunya Mikhail. Her latest book of poems, Tablets, Secrets of the Clay. Thanks so much to Jason for engineering. Thanks to Laura Hetzel for being the studio audience. Thanks to all you out there for listening today. And thanks to you too, Mom. Oh, and thanks to Eric and Janice listening from home. Okay. Happy birthday, Katie. Anybody else have any messages? Dunya, do you have any shout outs?
Happy birthday to Katie.
Katie Hartsock.
Do they know her?
Yep. Katie's a friend of the show.
A poet. And she had her book out. Also,
yes.
Book.
Yeah. Katie's been on a couple of times, Dunya. So we'll have to get you back too. We'll okay. do Poets okay. Reunion. Thanks everybody out there for listening. Until next time, I'm T. Hetzel.
Deep within each heart, there lies a magic spark that lights the fire of our imagination. And since the dawn of man, the strength of just I can has brought together people of all nations. There's nothing ordinary in the living of each day. There's a special part of us will play. Feel the flame forever burn, teaching lessons we must learn to bring.
WCBN FM Ann Arbor.
I could love you, but why begin it? 'Cause there ain't any future in it. She's got me and I'm not free, so
in a very, very long time, establishing themselves as a very heavy favorite to win the first national championship in over 35 years. And then I checked my phone around 4:35 p.m. today, and I found out something else had happened. And now, I'm not going to go too into the weeds of the details here, because there's obviously a lot unconfirmed with the situation, and I'm sure none of us want to be purely speculative, but as I'm sure you all have heard, Sharon Moore has been fired from his post as the head coach of the Michigan football team for what we can only refer to as off-the-field reasons.
For cause.
And like I said, it's not our place to comment on what Moore did or didn't do, what's going on there, absolutely not. But now the head coaching job of the Michigan Wolverines, probably one of the five best head coaching jobs in college football year in and year out, is open. And that means we're here. And let's talk about it. Just start things off, get the ball rolling. Let's all go around. Give me one candidate, one guy you want to see Michigan hire. Who's your dream hire for Michigan at the moment?
I don't even know who would be the dream hire. I mean, you can't go anything. You can't go like a Brian Kelly or a Coach O or something like that. You have to get creative at who you go after. All the Group of Five coaches that were up for –